Good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High in studio with you this morning. And we have on the phone, as we do at this same time every month, we have Attorney General Derek Schmidt online. Good morning, Mr. Schmidt. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Good morning, Kyle. I'm doing great. Thanks.
Well, Mr. Schmidt, a lot of things have been going on around the state. And one of the things I did want to have you talk about was something that came up last week, was that you would like to improve the civics education by integrating the naturalization test into Kansas schools.
Well, that's true. This is something that I've been focused on for a long while. I'm a huge fan of the importance of civics education. I think it's one of the fundamental purposes of having public schools. It's not the only purpose by any means, but it's one of the reasons we as a society, you know, decide to invest in public education, to pass on to the next generation the way that our system of governance is supposed to work. So I'm a huge fan of that. And one of the things we've suggested now for many years is that, like many other states, there are about two dozen that have done this, we ought to incorporate into the curriculum, maybe as a condition of graduation, passage of the citizenship exam that we give to new immigrants who choose to uproot their lives and come to the United States to become U.S. citizens. Doesn't seem too difficult to suggest that those of us who are privileged to have been born to citizenship ought to, at least in that minimal way, be held to the same standard as people who choose to become Americans. So we've been promoting that for some time, and there's a new proposal in the State House of Representatives to that effect, so we're glad to go over and offer our thoughts on it.
And I completely agree with you. I mean, a lot of that is the basic, you know, pillars of our society, you know, with the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. And I read in the story where only 2 in 5 people are able to answer that 3 out of 5 don't know what our three branches are. So, I think it's a huge thing to have that put into our civics program.
Well, you know, taking a test is no substitute for actually learning the material, and there's no substitute for a good teacher and a healthy learning environment to make that happen. So, you know, we don't want to conflate the two, but that doesn't change the fact that we have made a decision as a society that if you were born elsewhere and choose to uproot your life, follow the rules, and come to the United States lawfully and become a U.S. citizen, one step in that process is you have to be able to pass this basic exam about how our system of government is supposed to work. So we think it makes just good sense to extend that same idea to all of us.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Another story that came out last week, there were 2 Sedgwick County residents that were found guilty of Medicaid fraud.
Right. As we've talked before, Kyle, we do a lot of Medicaid fraud prosecution in our office. We have some special legal authority to do that throughout the state to protect the integrity of the Medicaid program, and we do a lot of it. This most recent conviction was 2 individuals in Sedgwick County who it was almost a classic sort of Medicaid fraud scheme. One of the individuals was a beneficiary, was legitimately entitled to receive Medicaid benefits, but not while he was incarcerated in the Sedgwick County Jail on unrelated criminal charges. But that's exactly what happened. While he was in jail, his partner, who was billing and being paid to provide in-home health care services to the fellow who was entitled to them, went ahead and kept billing when obviously she was not providing those services in his home because he was in jail. So that's a classic example of the type of Medicaid fraud we prosecute. They've both been convicted and ordered to repay the money that they stole from the taxpayers.
So, again, that, like you said, that's kind of just a classic Medicaid fraud, and we are glad that those two have been caught and forced to repay all of that money that they received that they were not entitled to. There was also a Baldwin man who was criminally fined for counterfeiting money.
Right. So this is a really unusual case. It was counterfeiting, but it actually was not counterfeiting money. It was counterfeiting laundry detergent. And no, we didn't wake up in the morning and say, how can we run some big sting operation to go catch the laundry detergent counterfeiters? It was brought to our attention by a complaint. But essentially, what was going on was this. This fellow was selling 5-gallon buckets of what he called Tide, like the laundry detergent Tide. Mm-hmm. Problem was, it wasn't Tide. We actually aren't entirely sure what it was, but it was some chemical compound that was not Tide. And so we filed criminal charges against him for counterfeiting the product. And ultimately, he pled guilty to that misdemeanor, and he's paid a small fine, and he's not going to do it again, he says. So, you know, sometimes it's the great issues of our time that land on our desk, and sometimes it's small issues, but we try to deal with all of them as they come.
Absolutely. So, and moving on, this was another one, a huge one that came out on Valentine's Day. A Georgia nursing home company has been fined $100,000 and banned from doing business in the state for 10 years for failing to protect patient and employees' personal information.
Right. This is a company that was operating a nursing home up in Humboldt, not too far from our neck of the woods. That nursing home closed in 2011. And unfortunately, the company, in many ways, just walked away from the building, the facility. They left patient files, employee files in unsecured cabinets. They left them on desktops, just sort of sitting around in this building. And the building was initially locked, but over time, as sometimes happens with buildings that are essentially abandoned, people broke in, vandals broke in. We don't know if it was kids, other adults, we don't know, but people broke in. The doors were kicked in, windows broken, they were left open. People would come and go. And of course, when that happened, anybody who came or went had access to all of those files that had grandma's social security number or her medical records or an employee's personal financial information in them. The company was notified, so they did have notice. The city said, you got to come fix this, and they didn't do it. So after a while, everybody's patience ran out. We filed a lawsuit against them for failing to meet their duty to protect all of that personal information that they had collected about employees and patients. And ultimately, this past week, we were able to settle that lawsuit. The company's paying a $100,000 fine for failure to properly protect the information it collected. It's banned from doing any further business in Kansas for the next decade. And they also have agreed that they are going to pay the cost of properly destroying, professionally shredding all of those records. We now have the records. We seized them several years ago to protect them from any further improper disclosure.
Yeah, I understand things close down sometimes. That happens from time to time, but you just can't just abandon things and leave it there, or it's too easy for people to get that stuff, and you know, you can end up, you know, falsifying, you know, identities and stuff like that by just leaving that stuff laying around.
Well, the law in Kansas says that if you do business in a way that requires you in the course of your business to collect and hold other people's personal information, you have a duty to safeguard that information. That's the basic rule in the law. And, you know, I like to think we're very reasonable in how we enforce it. We're not out being the record-keeping police, but sometimes we come across these extreme cases like this one where somebody has collected other people's information, they have a duty to safeguard it, and they are so far away from satisfying that duty that we just think it's appropriate to take enforcement action. So that's what happened here.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you on that. Here's another one that we release, that you guys release monthly. It's 334 crime victims received support this month for the violent crimes, the Kansas Crimes Victims Compensation Board.
Right. We've talked about this one before. This is a terrific program that's been in law for decades in Kansas, where people who become victims of violent crime through no fault of their own, they didn't contribute, they weren't part of the criminal conduct, they just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and became a victim, and have no other means to sort of clean up the results of becoming a crime victim. So they don't have insurance, they don't have finances, but they do have expenses as a result of being victimized. They might have burial expenses because a family member was murdered and they now have to deal with a funeral cost, or they might have mental health counseling expenses because they were a victim of an assault and now need some assistance going forward, those types of things. We have the ability to provide some help for that every month. And this last month, we provided the help to more than 300 Kansans. In that month alone, they needed that sort of assistance.
And the good thing about the program, it doesn't come from taxes mainly. It comes from court costs and fines and inmate wages and parole fees and also restitution. That's where that money comes from, correct?
That's exactly right. So the whole idea is that as a group, the people who caused the problem, those who have been convicted of crimes, are paying the cost of supporting the people who were the victims of that problem, the victims of crime. So we think it's a very just program.
It is a very, very good program. And this one came across yesterday, Mr. Schmidt. The city of Frontenac had violated a KORA with a fee request.
Yes, we did just issue that finding yesterday. The Kansas Open Records Act is one of the main open government or transparency laws in Kansas. It's been on the books for many years. Our office is one of the enforcers of that act, along with local county or district attorneys. And in this case, there had been a complaint filed with us alleging that the city of Frontenac had violated the Open Records Act in several ways, and we found one violation. Essentially, the city had demanded a $3,500 upfront payment in order to look for records that had been requested. Now, it's perfectly lawful for a governmental entity to request advance payment before it searches for records, and it's also perfectly lawful for that entity to charge for the cost of its staff time in order to look for those records and produce them. The problem here was that the city, in coming up with that $3,500 figure, was charging for lawyer time to review and redact records at $225 an hour, and we simply thought that was an unreasonable amount. You didn't need a $225 an hour lawyer in order to review documents to see if you had them and to see if they could be produced. And so we ultimately found the city in violation for the excess cost.
So, again, that was the city of Frontenac. A couple of the requirements that the city has to go with here is they must cease and desist from any further violation of the KORA, obviously. And they also must review and amend its city ordinance for outlining fees for access to public records to ensure compliance with KORA.
That's right. We discover that the vast majority of violations of state open government laws, the Open Records Act or the Open Meetings Act, the vast majority are not malicious. The vast majority result from poor training or, you know, a local entity that simply hasn't focused on and maintained appropriate procedures and requirements to comply with the law when a citizen asks for access to public records. And so whenever we take enforcement action, we tend to review the local unit's policies and procedures and require them to update, fix those as part of whatever remedies in order.
Well, Mr. Schmidt, a lot of things going on. I know you've been really busy. So, again, I thank you giving a little bit of your time today to talk to us and about what is going on around the state.
Thanks, Kyle. It's always my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
All right. We appreciate having you on. That is Attorney General Derek Schmidt calling in today, as he does once a month around this time, to talk about what's going on around the state. Lots of things that he was talking about. Of course, the thing, the story that we had this morning was about the city of Frontenac violating a KORA with fee requests. They just thought that the lawyer fee of $225 per hour to redact stuff was just a tad too much. So that is what is going on around the state, and we appreciate Mr. Schmidt coming on today to talk about a few of those things. We're going to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have your news at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF.